Very well, Mr. Markham. What is it you want to know?
I want to know what you've been saying to Miss Grant.
Miss who?
Miss Grant. Leslie Grant, the young lady who was in here just now, my fiancée.
Oh, I see. Tell me, has she lived in Six Ashes very long?
No, only since Christmas. Why?
And how long have you been engaged to her? Believe me, there is a serious reason for my question.
As it happens, we got engaged last night, but I felt...
Only last night. I see. Well, very awkward.
What's awkward about it?
Do you know who this so-called Leslie Grant really is?
Who she really is? What do you mean by that?
No, of course not. Well, I suppose I shall have to tell you the truth.
We present The House in Gallows Lane, based on the book Till Death Do Us Part, a Dr. Fell mystery by John Dixon Carr. Dramatized for radio by Peter Ling, with Donald Sinden as Dr. Fell. Part 1, The Fortune Teller.
Some extracts from notes made by me, Gideon Fell, on the night of Monday, July the 15th, 1936. This morning, my breakfast was interrupted by an unexpected visitor with news of some very mysterious events which had taken place at a little village not far from Hastings, where I was enjoying a short holiday. The news was so serious, I decided to telephone my friend, Detective Inspector Hadley of Scotland Yard, or, as I must now get used to calling him, Superintendent Hadley. A few hours later, he met me in the garden of the village pub at Six Ashes, and I told him as much as I could.
Now, just a minute, Richard Markham. His name seems familiar somehow.
Well, perhaps you've seen one of his plays. He writes psychological thrillers, dealing with the minds and motives of criminals. Do you remember Poisonous Mistake? Rather an unfortunate title, as things turned out. But you must have seen Panic in the Family, surely.
I've got better things to do with my spare time.
Oh, my dear chap, I thought you'd be a regular first-nighter since your well-deserved promotion. Don't you enjoy the social world?
Can we please get back to Mr. Richard Markham?
Yes. It's a bad business. Though it began, pleasantly enough, a village fete was going on in the grounds of Ash Hall. A fortune teller, rifle range, and usual fun and games. It had been a glorious afternoon. But by the time Richard and his fiancée...
Hello! How's the happy couple?
Major Price, how on earth did he find out?
Oh, that's villagers for you. I dare say everyone knows by now. Come on, let's get it over.
Dick, Leslie, I've been looking out for you all the afternoon. And so has my wife. Now, put us out of our misery and tell me, is it true?
Is what true, Major?
Wedding bells and all that. Are you really going to tie the knot?
Yes, it's true, though I don't know how you...
My dear chap, many, many congratulations. I'm delighted. We all are. This calls for celebration. We must tell my wife, Lord and Lady Ash, Mrs. Minster, everybody. And may we know when is the great day?
We haven't quite decided yet, have we, darling?
No, but I'm going to see the fortune teller. Perhaps he'll be able to tell me.
The great Swami? That's his tent over there. But I won't let you go until you patronize my little show. The rifles are already loaded. All you have to do is...
Guns? Oh, no, I couldn't possibly. I've never fired a gun in my life.
Well, now's your chance. First time lucky and all that. Do you know, Cynthia Drew had a go just now, and she turned out to be an absolute crack shot. Oh, I beg your pardon. Stupid of me. Look, I'll show you how to hold the rifle. You only have to squeeze this trigger.
No, really, I know it's silly, but I'm simply terrified of guns.
Good heavens, there's nothing to it. Just take the rifle and blaze away at the target.
Sorry and all that, but she'd rather not. Come on, darling, let's go and see this blessed fortune teller.
No, I have to go in by myself. They only take one at a time. You stay here and talk to the Major. I'll see you presently.
Oh, dear. I'm afraid I put my foot in it, didn't I? Mentioning Cynthia. Tactless of me.
As soon as I said it...
Now, let's get this clear. There was never anything serious between Cynthia and me.
Well, if you say so, of course. Only some of the women seem to think... My wife was talking to Lady Ash, and they both thought Cynthia...
I know. For the past 2 years, the entire village has been trying to push Cynthia into my arms, whether we like it or not. I can't imagine why everyone's so interested.
Well, damn it. You're our local celebrity. Or perhaps I should say one of our two celebrities.
I'm sorry?
Hasn't anyone told you about the fortune teller?
No. I thought it would be Miss Feathers from the post office as usual, but I guess...
No, not this year. We had a spot of luck. I persuaded a newcomer to step in. He's rented a house in Gallows Lane this summer, and it might embarrass him if the word gets around. You see, the great Swami happens to be a leading authority on criminal investigation. Sir Harvey Gilman.
Gilman? The Home Office pathologist?
That's the fellow. He may not be an expert on palmistry or crystal gazing, but he knows a lot about human nature, and he's been kept busy all the afternoon telling people about themselves. Heaven knows what he said to Lady Ash. She was almost speechless when she came out. And they say Dr. Minster was quite...
Oh, hello. Someone taking my name in vain?
Ah, oh, Doctor. I was just telling Dick. I hear you were very impressed by the great Swami.
Oh, good heavens, no. It was my wife who visited him. Not quite my cup of tea, I'm afraid.
So I see. You'd rather go off for a round of golf, I take it.
Oh, what makes you say... Oh, the bag of clubs. Oh, I wish I could. No, I'm doing my bit this afternoon, in charge of the pitch and putt. It's very simple. You're given a club and a ball, and at the end of the day, the lowest number of strokes into the cup gets a prize. Oh, I'm afraid business has slackened off now. So come on, Dick. You're a sportsman. Let's see the colour of your money.
Later on, perhaps. I'm waiting for Leslie. She's in there having her sixth penneth with the great Swami.
Is she indeed? Oh, talking of Leslie, I understand congratulations are in order.
It's worse than the Bush Telegraph. Who told you? Miss Feathers at the post office?
No, it was, actually, it was Cynthia.
Cynthia? I suppose I should have realized.
Look out, here comes the rain. Good Lord, what's going on over there?
Major Price was staring at the little tent opposite. A hanging lamp threw distorted shadows of the two people inside. Leslie Grant was seated at a small table, facing her, a squat figure with a curiously bulbous head. The great Swami was wearing a turban. As the three men watched, Leslie jumped to her feet. The Swami also rose, trying to stop her. Then she turned and ran out of the tent, straight into Dick's arms.
Whatever is it? What's wrong?
Nothing. Just the thunder. It makes me rather nervous.
What's he been saying to you?
Oh, nothing. I don't think he's very good, really. It was just the usual rubbish, a happy life, a little illness, but nothing serious. A letter will bring some good news.
Then why were you so frightened?
I wasn't frightened. What do you mean?
You're still shaking. Look, you stay here with the Major while I go.
Where are you going?
I want to have a few words with the bloke myself.
No, you mustn't do that.
I won't be long.
By this time, it had started to rain. People began to hurry back from the cricket match to take shelter, while Dick made his way into the fortune teller's booth.
I'm sorry. That was the last sitting for the day. I'm about to shut up shop.
That's all right, Sir Harvey. I didn't come here to get my fortune told.
Oh, so you know me?
Yes, sir. And what I want to know is...
I'm afraid you have the advantage of me, Mr...
My name is Markham. Richard Markham.
Oh, very well, Mr. Markham. What is it you want to know?
I want to know what you've been saying to Miss Grant.
Miss who?
Miss Grant. Leslie Grant, the young lady who was in here just now, my fiancée.
Oh, I see. Tell me, has she lived in Six Ashes very long?
No, only since Christmas. Why?
And how long have you been engaged to her? Believe me, there is a serious reason for my question.
As it happens, we got engaged last night, but I've...
Only last night? Oh, I see. Oh, how very awkward.
What's awkward about it?
Do you know who this so-called Leslie Grant really is?
Who she really is? What do you mean by...
No, of course not. Well, I suppose I shall have to tell you the truth.
And with the sound of that rifle shot, Dick Markham's world turned into a nightmare. He saw the bullet hole jump up in the canvas wall. Sir Harvey was flung forward, as if by the blow of a giant hand, face down across the table. And at the same moment, he heard Leslie's terrified voice. He rushed out and saw her holding the rifle, with the rain streaming down her face.
I'm sorry, Major. I couldn't help it.
No, no. It was my fault. I was trying to help you overcome your fear of guns.
When you put the rifle into my hands, it just seemed to go off all by itself. I do hope I haven't hit anything.
At 9:30 that night, Dick was alone in his cottage, still trying to sort out the confused thoughts that whirled around in his brain. Sir Harvey Gilman's shadow had been clearly outlined on the canvas wall, a perfect target if anyone wanted to shoot him. But why should anyone want to do such a thing? And why Leslie, of all people, the girl he loved, the girl he was going to marry? Of course it was an accident, it must have been. But he couldn't stop thinking about it. And then...
Hello?
Dick, Hugh Minster.
Yes, Doctor, how's Sir Harvey? Is he still...
Yes, he's alive, but...
But what? He's going to be all right, isn't he?
Oh, yes. In fact, he wants to see you. I'm with him now. Could you come over here? You know where he is? The house in Gallows Lane?
Yes, I know it, but are you sure he's fit enough to...
I'm quite sure. Can you come right away?
Of course. Give me a few minutes to ring Leslie and tell her he's all right. She's worried sick. She's been ringing me all evening.
I can imagine, but don't ring her. He says you mustn't tell her anything. Don't bring anyone with you. And don't tell anyone about this phone call.
Oh. Well, all right, but why should
I... He'll explain when you get here. Goodbye.
Dick was just replacing the receiver, but he nearly dropped it because the door swung open.
Hello, Dick.
Cynthia, what are you doing here?
I'm sorry. Did I startle you? I did knock at the front door, but I couldn't make you hear, so as it was open, I just walked in. I hope you don't mind.
Of course not.
I had to come and tell you. I only heard the news today. I'm so glad for you and Leslie. I'm sure you'll both be terribly happy.
Thank you. We are very happy, except...
I know. It's awful business about Sir Harvey Gilman.
Yes.
It is Sir Harvey Gilman, isn't it? I mean, the man who moved into the house at Gallows Lane and kept himself so mysteriously in the background. But what exactly happened this afternoon?
Weren't you there?
No. But I did hear. They say he's been very badly hurt. He may be dying. Is that true?
Well, actually, I'm not sure.
Nobody really knows what's happening. But there are some ridiculous rumours going about. I'm so sorry for Leslie. She's a dear girl. Major Price should never have given her that rifle.
Look, Cynthia, I'm afraid I was just on my way out.
I haven't seen Lord Ashe, so I don't know what he thinks, but I was wondering, why does he always look at Leslie in such a strange way whenever he meets her? Sorry. What were you saying?
I said I've got to go out right away.
To see Leslie, I suppose.
No, Dr. Minster just rang. He wants me to go round to Sir Harvey's cottage for some reason.
All right. Well, I'll come with you. There might be something I could do to help.
No! I'm sorry, I've got to go alone.
Oh, are all writers as temperamental as you? Well, if I'm not wanted, I may as well go home.
No, listen, Cynthia, I didn't mean that.
It's all right. I understand. But remember, if you ever do need any help, you know you can always count on me. Good night.
When Dick reached the house in Gallows Lane, Dr. Minster opened the front door.
Come in, old man. Listen, I can't go on with this pretense. It's not fair asking me to, and I've told him so.
What pretense? You mean he isn't badly hurt?
He isn't hurt at all. He just fainted from shock. So, of course, everybody thought he was dying or dead. I couldn't be sure myself until I got him here and used the probe. But unless you get a direct head or heart wound, a bullet from a .22 target rifle isn't usually very dangerous. He didn't even lose much blood. His back will be sore for a day or two, but apart from that, he's as fit as he ever was.
I don't understand. You don't seem to realize Leslie's nearly out of her mind. She thinks she killed him.
My apologies, Mr. Markham, but at present we must keep my recovery a secret. Come in, please.
After you.
Thank you.
You'll understand the reason presently.
Sit down, please.
I propose to conduct a little experiment, not in the cause of justice, but to satisfy my own curiosity. I'd like to solve one of the few problems that ever defeated my friend Gideon Fell, and I hope you'll agree to help me. It concerns the young woman who calls herself Leslie Grant.
Yes. This afternoon, you were about to tell me something about Miss Grant.
You're in love with her, no doubt. Or you think you are.
I know I am.
That's rather unfortunate. Tell me, has she by any chance invited you to dinner at her house one day this week or next to celebrate the engagement?
As a matter of fact, she has, tomorrow night. But look here, I can't stand any more of this. What is all this nonsense? Are you trying to tell me her name isn't Leslie Grant?
I am. Her real name is Jordan. And she's a poisoner.
That's absurd.
You don't believe me yet. But I phoned Scotland Yard. There'll be a man down tomorrow who knows her well. He has photos and fingerprints.
What's she supposed to have done?
She has poisoned three men. She married two of them. The first was an American lawyer named Foster. The second was a Liverpool cotton broker called Davis. Both wealthy men. But her third victim...
Stop. I don't want to hear any more of this. It's impossible. You're making it up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I understand how you must feel, but she's a cold, ruthless killer. And the sooner you understand that, the safer you'll be.
Safer?
She's devised a method of murder that baffles Gideon Fell as much as it baffles me.
Wait a minute. If what you say is true, if the police have her fingerprints, why didn't they arrest her?
Because they couldn't prove it. Three murders, and they couldn't prove any of them. The American died at his house in Kensington. I went there with Detective Inspector Hadley, now Superintendent Hadley. It seemed to be a clear case of suicide. The deceased was found in his bedroom. The door and windows were securely locked on the inside. The cause of death was hydrocyanic acid injected into the forearm. The syringe was on the floor beside him. The stricken widow, who'd spent the evening alone at the opera, was prostrate with grief.
And you're saying the widow was...
The woman you know as Leslie Grant. Yes.
But it doesn't make...
Now, let me finish, please. A year later, I happened to be at the Liverpool Assizes. Hadley was there, too, on another matter. We ran into each other at the Sessions House. A man living near Prince's Park had killed himself with a syringe full of prussic acid. An elderly chap, but in good health, without any money worries. The inquest had just concluded. We saw a woman in black coming along the passage, supported by her friends. I'll never forget the look on Hadley's face as he turned to me and said, "My God, it's the same woman."
Are you saying it was Leslie again? My Leslie?
Your Leslie, yes. Hadley began an investigation, but the result was the same as before. Davis was found in his office, sprawled across his desk, and the room was locked on the inside.
What did Leslie... I mean, what did the widow say about all this?
Oh, she was wide-eyed and horrified. She admitted she'd been the wife of Burton Foster, but said the whole thing was a terrible coincidence. The third stage in her progress can be summed up briefly. It happened last year in Paris. Someone sent me a cutting from a French newspaper. A young Englishman, Martin Belford, had just become engaged to a Mademoiselle Leslie something or other, the name escapes me now, and they dined together to celebrate the occasion. Next morning, he was found dead in his bedroom. Do I need to tell you the circumstances?
The same?
Absolutely.
But wait a minute. The circumstances weren't the same. She wasn't married to what's-his-name Belford. She wouldn't have gained anything by his death. So where's the motive?
She didn't have a motive, don't you see? By this time, the girl can't help herself. The poisoner never stops. The poisoner can't stop. It's become a psychic disease. The power over life and death.
No, I can't believe that. I won't believe it. It must be another girl who looks like Leslie. There are lots of cases of mistaken identity.
When she walked into the tent this afternoon, I knew her at once. And she knew me. So I took the opportunity to put the fear of God into her. And a few minutes later, she took a pot shot at me. It's only by the grace of God it didn't do much damage. But for once she lost her head, because she was planning a little poisoning party for someone else. Tell me, you said Miss Grant hadn't been in the village very long. Do you know where she was before she came to Six Ashes?
She had a job teaching English in Paris.
Thank you. There's something else you may be able to confirm. Your Leslie doesn't much care for jewellery, does she?
No, she doesn't. She never wears any.
That's odd, because I remember that when she was Mrs. Foster, she had a small but efficient wall safe in the bedroom. When she married Davis, they had a wall safe too. And when she lived alone in Paris, she had one installed in her bedroom. Do you know if she has one now?
Yes.
She had it put in specially. When I asked her why, she laughed and said she kept her diary in it.
Her diary? Well, I suppose she'd have to confide in someone or something. But that safe might contain something more important. Remember, no poison was ever traced to her. In fact, Gideon fell once from us.
Excuse me. May I say something?
Oh, of course, Doctor. I'm afraid we've been rather neglecting you. What is it?
Well, I heard the other day that Dr. Fell is spending the summer in Hastings. He's rented a cottage there. Perhaps if you talk to him...
Yeah, by all means. Let's call the old boy in and ask his opinion. My opinion, for what it's worth, is this. It strikes me, Mr. Markham, that you've two choices. You can pick up that telephone and ask your fiancée if it's true, and no doubt she'll deny it. On the other hand, you can help me find out what kind of a person she really is. And perhaps we'll discover how she managed to commit 3 murders and get away with it. Think it over. And tomorrow morning, let me know...
Just a minute.
Oh, what is it now?
I thought I heard...
Dr. Minster walked quietly to the windows and drew back the curtains. It was a warm evening and the windows were open. He leaned out, looking left and right, then closed the curtains again.
No, it must have been my imagination. Sir Harvey, it's getting late. You've had a very taxing day. As your medical advisor, I suggest it's time you're in bed. I'll see you comfortably settled. Then I'll get back to my poor wife, who must be wondering what's become of me. And Dick, you better go home and get some sleep, if you can.
It took Dick a long time to get to sleep, and when he slept, he had bad dreams. He was woken at dawn by the telephone.
Hello?
You must come to Gallows Lane at once. If you don't, it will be too late.
What? Who is that?
Then the line went dead. Dick wasted no time. He pulled on his clothes and ran all the way, taking a shortcut which brought him out through a grove of birch trees behind Gilman's house. The sun was rising, but beyond the garden wall, he could see the sitting room windows where a lamp was burning. Then he heard a sound, the rasp of metal on stone. And further along the wall, as it followed the curve of the garden, Dick saw a rifle barrel sliding into position. Someone was taking careful aim at those windows. A flock of startled birds rose from the trees. Glancing at the house, Dick saw a bullet hole in the window pane. When he looked back, the rifle had vanished.
Hey, you!
He heard somebody running away into the undergrowth among the trees. But the rising sun was in his eyes, and he couldn't see anyone. He began to run blindly along the path, and a few seconds later, he heard footsteps hurrying towards him.
Who's there? Who are you?
Cynthia, what are you doing here?
I was out for a walk. I woke early and couldn't get back to sleep. What's happened? I thought I heard...
Someone fired a shot at Sir Harvey's window. This is the second time I've seen it happen. Yesterday afternoon, I saw the bullet hole jump up in the wall of the tent. Today, the shot went through the window. I didn't see who fired it, but... Oh, no.
What is it?
There, in the long grass. A .22 Winchester.
Do you think it's the gun Leslie had yesterday?
For heaven's sake, what makes you say that?
Well, the rifles at the fete were all borrowed from the gun room at Ash Hall. But last night, when they took them back, the one Leslie used was missing. Dick! Don't touch it. It could be fingerprints.
If it was used at the fete, it will be covered in prints anyway. I better leave it where it is. We must make sure Sir Harvey's all right.
Opening the garden gate, they crossed the lawn and peered into the sitting room. Sir Harvey Gilman was sitting at his desk, facing the window with a bullet hole in it. He had lolled sideways and might have been dozing, but his eyes were open. And then they both noticed something else.
Dick, the bullet missed him.
It was true. The bullet must have passed over his shoulder, shattering the glass in a picture frame and burying itself in the wall.
Hang on.
What are you doing?
Looking for a sizable stone. Ah, this'll do. Now, if I reach inside, I can open the window catch. It's better. Here, let me give you a hand. Can you manage?
Yes.
Oh, Dicker, I can smell something. A bit like nail varnish, only stronger.
Much stronger. It's prussic acid.
You mean someone poisoned him?
No, that's impossible. Here's the syringe where he dropped it. And his sleeves rolled up. You can see the puncture mark.
There's something else. Drawing pins on the carpet. Someone spilled a box of drawing pins.
And he probably knocked it off the desk when he slumped over. Look, we both know the windows were fastened on the inside. I'd better check the doors as well. I expect they're all locked.
Why? I don't understand.
Don't you see? It'll prove no one else tried to kill him.
But somebody did try to kill him. Someone shot at him with a rifle.
And the bullet missed. You can see for yourself, this is a case of suicide. He took a hypodermic full of prussic acid and injected it into his left arm. He killed himself. We know that.
This is something to do with Leslie, isn't it?
Leslie? No, of course not.
You're worried about her. I can tell.
It's nothing to do with Leslie. Gilman committed suicide and we must report it. Now, could you go around to Constable Miller at the police house while I phone Dr. Minster? He'll know what to do.
When Dr. Minster heard the news, he knew exactly what to do. By the time he reached Hastings, I was just finishing my breakfast.
I'm sorry to disturb you so early, Dr. Fell.
Not at all. No. May I offer you a cup of coffee? There's still some in the bar.
No, thank you. I'll come straight to the point, if I may. I believe you are acquainted with Sir Harvey Gilman.
Certainly. Our paths have crossed from time to time. Is he a friend of yours?
Not exactly. He took a house for the summer in my village, Six Ashes.
Ah, well, please give him my regards when you see him.
I'm afraid that won't be possible.
What?
I have to tell you, Sir Harvey died early this morning.
Good heavens. Well, surely that was very unexpected. Last time I met him, he was in excellent health.
It was not only unexpected. In my opinion, it's inexplicable.
Well, what exactly do you mean by that?
When you've heard the whole story, I think you will agree that the circumstances of his death are highly suspicious. That is why I came to find you. Dr. Fell, we need your help.
When he had given me the details, I made one telephone call, and then we returned to Six Ashes in his car. The first person I wanted to meet was the enigmatic Miss Grant. But when we called on her, she was not at home. I subsequently learned that she was at the office of her solicitor, Major Price.
Thank you for coming in so promptly, my dear. The fact is, Lord Ashe has asked me to make a few inquiries on his behalf.
Lord Ashe? I don't understand.
It's rather awkward, but... Well, it's to do with one of the guns he lent me for the rifle range.
Oh, I wish I'd never touched the beastly thing. How is Sir Harvey this morning, do you know?
Well, yes. I'm afraid this will come as a shock to you,
He's
but...
He's not... dead. Oh, God, I didn't mean to do it. I didn't shoot him deliberately. It was an accident. I swear it was.
No, no, my dear young lady, don't misunderstand me. It isn't a question of his being shot. According to the constable on duty, Sir Harvey took his own life. An injection of poison.
Poison? I'm sorry to hear that. Did he leave a note? Any explanation?
No, nothing like that.
So why do you have to ask me about the rifle?
Last night, when we packed up the guns, one of them was missing. The one you used. You don't happen to remember what you did with it after...
No, everything happened so fast. I suppose I gave it back to you, didn't I?
I really don't remember. But this morning, when the old man was already dead, somebody stuck a rifle over the wall and fired a shot through his window. The gun was found in the undergrowth this morning by Dick Markham and Cynthia Drew.
Dick? And Cynthia? Well, what was she doing there?
They were out for an early morning walk, I gather. But Constable Miller is trying to discover how the gun came to be there.
But what? You're not suggesting I somehow smuggled the gun away and then took it round? Oh, that's ridiculous. Why on earth would I do such a thing?
I don't know. There are a lot of questions to be answered. And as your solicitor, I thought we should try and clear things up, if we can.
What sort of questions?
Well, I know so little about you, really. And since I want to help you...
Please, let's not beat about the bush. Tell me what you want to know.
Very well. What did Sir Harvey say to you when you were in the fortune-telling booth? And don't tell me it was the usual sort of thing, because it wasn't. Hang it all, I was there. I saw you when you came out. What was it that upset you so badly?
I can't tell you.
Perhaps it was something he knew about you. Something in your past.
Major Price, you must believe me. I never saw that man before in my life. I swear it.
Then what was it? Don't you see? The circumstances were unusual, to say the least. The fortune teller says something that upsets you. Dick rushes in to find out what's wrong. A rifle goes off. Accidentally, of course. And the old chap is slightly wounded, though not really hurt.
Not really hurt? And Dick knew that. He knew that and he didn't tell me.
Well, no. What's the matter?
I'm sorry, I really can't tell you anymore. I've got to go.
But...
I arranged to meet Dick at my house. I've got to see him.
And she walked out before the Major could stop her. When she got home, the front door was ajar, but Dick wasn't there. She went through to the kitchen, but there was no sign of him. Then she heard footsteps overhead. Puzzled, she hurried upstairs and opened her bedroom door.
Dick, why did you... Cynthia!
Hello, Leslie.
What are you doing here?
Oh, I should have thought that was pretty obvious.
I didn't realize you'd taken up burglary in your spare time. How did you know where to find the wall safe?
Oh, it wasn't difficult. I just looked behind all the pictures until I got the right one.
I meant, how did you know I had a safe? Did Dick tell you?
No. The man who installed it had a few drinks at the pub afterwards. Within the hour, half the village knew about it.
It was lucky I ordered such a reliable model. Did you really expect to open it with a hammer and chisel? Oh, don't be silly. Put it down.
Don't come any closer. I mean to find out what's inside that safe before I leave. Otherwise, I think I shall kill you.
At that moment, I was still on my way to Six Ashes in Minster's car. So I didn't learn of this encounter until some time later. At 6 a.m., Dick and Cynthia had left Constable Miller on duty in the house at Gallows Lane. And when Dick returned, he found the constable still guarding the body.
Oh, he's still here?
Yes, sir. I'm waiting for the ambulance to take him away, ready for the autopsy.
Of course. Not that there's much doubt about it. Dr. Minster said it was obviously prussic acid from the syringe.
Well, they don't know that yet, not for sure.
What else could it be? You can see the puncture in his arm. And that's... I suppose that is the mark of a needle. You don't think it could have been made with one of those drawing pins?
If you don't mind me saying so, sir, you've been writing too many mystery plays. Why would anyone go and do a thing like that?
Goodness only knows. Come to that, what did he want with all those drawing pins anyway?
I can tell you that, sir. This weather, he liked to keep the window open. But he had a lot of trouble with wasps. They kept flying in from the garden and pestering him. So he tried putting up some bits of gauze over the window frames to keep them out.
Ah, yes. In America, they call them screens.
I dare say. Excuse me for asking, sir, but was there a special reason for you coming back here? Were you looking for something, perhaps?
No, nothing in particular. It's just... Well, the whole damn thing's so mysterious, I wanted to have another look around. Hello, that sounds like your ambulance.
Oh, no, sir. It's Dr. Minster. And he's got someone with him. A large gentleman. He's having a bit of a squeeze getting out.
That will be Dr. Gideon Fell. Minster made good time. It's only just... Oh, Lord, I hadn't realized it was so late. I'm supposed to be meeting someone.
After you, Doctor. Straight ahead.
Thank you. This is worthy. Ah. Good day, gentlemen.
Dick, I'm glad you're here. Let me introduce Dr. Fell, Richard Markham, and Constable Miller.
How do you do?
Morning, sir.
Mr. Markham, I believe I may say I am the bearer of good tidings.
I beg your pardon? We can soon settle this. As you see, Doctor, the deceased was found here at his desk. He hasn't been moved. There's only one question I have to ask you. Who is he?
What the...
Quite frankly, I haven't the slightest idea. But I can tell you this. He is not Sir Harvey Gilman.
Say that again?
As far as I know, Gilman is alive and well and in Cornwall.
What?
You have been the victim of a cruel and brutal hoax. Miss Grant is not a poisoner. She didn't murder Foster or Davis or Bilford for the simple reason that they never existed. It was a pack of lies from start to finish. Dr. Minster suspected from the start that the man was an impostor.
But why didn't you say...
Well, I couldn't be certain until Dr. Fell confirmed my suspicions. But you see, when the Major first introduced him to us, Sir Harvey made us promise to keep his identity a secret.
Oh, no, no, back us. Didn't he just...
But I was interested in his work as a pathologist, and I asked him about some of his cases. There were a few details that puzzled me. For instance, he made some reference to the two chambers of the heart, and every medical student knows the heart has four chambers.
I don't know what to say. It's like waking up out of a nightmare. Leslie's completely innocent. The three victims never existed. There were never any poisonings or locked rooms.
I beg your pardon. No, there was indeed a poisoning, and there was a locked room, and we are in it.
Yes, of course. But what does it all mean?
The impostor's story wasn't true, but somebody made it come true. That is why Superintendent Hadley is now on his way down from London. I asked him to meet me at the local pub, where I've booked a couple of rooms.
And that's all you can tell me?
And I'm hoping you may be able to tell me who the impostor really is, or was. I never saw him before, in spite of the fact that he seems to have claimed acquaintance with me. But he was, I suspect, something of an evil genius.
Well, one thing's crystal clear.
Hello. The landlord said I'd find you in the garden.
Yes, they're still getting our rooms ready. Hadley, this is Richard Markham, the playwright.
How do you know?
Has everything been taken care of?
Yes, they've carted the body off to the mortuary, and I hope he burns in hell.
Oh, easy now. We've been discussing the situation. Hadley, I think you were about to say something.
I was going to say, one thing's clear. The center of the plot was your fiancée, Miss Grant.
But that makes no sense.
It made sufficient sense to undermine your faith in her. That tissue of lies was, in its own way, a minor work of art. It was directed at every chink in your armor. The fortune teller grafted a psychological plot onto Miss Grant, which had all the criminal subtleties that would appeal to you. You might say it was a case of the playwright hoist with his own petard.
Thank you very much. When he told his damn story, he made it sound so believable.
How many other people actually know the story?
Just the two of us, myself and Dr. Minster.
Could anyone else have overheard it?
No. Ah, wait a minute. The doctor thought he heard someone outside the window. I remember now, he opened the curtains and looked out.
And was anyone there?
No. Well, at least he couldn't see anyone.
So, apart from you and the doctor, the good people of Six Ashes still think the impostor was Gilman. Anything he said will be taken as gospel truth. Somebody believes Leslie Grant is a murderer.
And somebody committed a so-called impossible crime in the sublime belief that Leslie Grant would be blamed for it.
Are you saying someone hates Leslie enough to commit a murder in order to...
My dear chap, we can't make any guesses about the motive. All we know is that Leslie Grant provided a very convenient scapegoat.
And now Leslie... Oh, Lord, I completely forgot. I was supposed to be at her house about an hour ago. You'll have to excuse me.
You, if you've no objection, I'd rather like to come with you. I look forward to meeting the young lady myself. How about it, Hadley?
I think that it would be an excellent idea.
I don't understand it.
Well, she must have got tired of waiting and gone out.
Well, she wouldn't do that. She was going to make me some lunch. Let's see it. She must be in here somewhere. Come on in. It's probably in the kitchen. She's got the wireless on. She might not have heard us.
Well, the house seems remarkably quiet.
I told you she's gone out.
No, she would have left me a note. She must be upstairs. I'll just slip up and see. Leslie? Where are you?
There's one remarkable feature of life in a small village. Mm-hmm. I've noticed it before. People leave the front doors open. They drop in and out of each other's houses. Everyone's amazingly trusting.
If you ask me, there are downsides to trusting.
Yes, I'm afraid I have to agree with you. In this particular case, a lot of trouble would have been saved if...
Dr. Fell! Superintendent! We've got to ring for an ambulance!
Have you found her?
What's happened?
I found her in the bedroom, lying on the floor at the foot of the bed. She's got a nasty bruise on her forehead and there's blood trickling down her face.
By thunder! Are you saying somebody came in and attacked Miss Grant while...
No, not Leslie. It's Cynthia. Cynthia Drew. Oh, and the wall safe is wide open and it's empty.
But where's Miss Grant?
I don't know. She seems to have disappeared.
In part one of The House in Gallows Lane, based on the book Till Death Do Us Part by John Dixon Carr, Dr. Gideon Fell was played by Donald Sinden and Superintendent Hadley by John Hartley. Sir Harvey Gilman, Richard Todd, Dick Markham, Robert Portal, Leslie Grant, Alison Pettit, Major Price, John Woodnut, Cynthia Drew, Rachel Atkins, Dr. Minster, Christopher Wright, Police Constable Bert Miller, Brian Parr. The House in Gallows Lane was dramatized for radio by Peter Ling and directed by Enid Williams.